Prior to the internet, the last technology that had any real effect on the way people sat down and talked to each other was the table. So said Clay Shirky. Meanwhile, Stephen Wright has described the internet as being like the Wild West, because there are no rules. On this Industry Insight episode of the History of Advertising podcast, we are looking at the rise of the internet and how it's affected Adland. Rory Sutherland is vice chairman of Ogilvy UK and a behavioural science expert. He recalls how Adland was slow to see the potentials of the internet.
There were probably 50% of people in Adland were sceptical. So in the first few years of the internet, 94, 95, 96, there were people who referred to it as teletext for the 90s. Now that seems hard to imagine now, but I mean that was perfectly, you know, look, this is just one of those fads. Advertising, basically, it's always press, cinema, posters, you know, TV. It will be for the foreseeable future. Every now and then a fad comes along and people go to a load of conferences called The Future is Teletext, or, you know, but in truth, nothing's going to fucking happen.
In fact, Rory sees a lot of parallels between the rise of the internet in the 1990s and the mass introduction of electricity into people's homes in the 1920s.
I spend a whole load of my time working on Microsoft, working on Compaq, working on various internet projects, you know. And it was all about, hey, the great thing about this new thing is it allows you to do this. And of course, half the time, you're completely right. That's exactly what people do. They've got the new technology, it allows them to do this new thing, and they do the new thing. And half the time, you're kind of winging it. There's a fascinating thing which I absolutely loved, which I discovered in an ad for, I think, the Dublin Corporation, encouraging people to get electricity in their homes. Now, that's the first thing that fascinated me, which is the idea that you'd ever have to market electricity as a good idea, right? So if you or I or anybody else moved into a house which wasn't on the grid, you know, the idea that we'd need a salesman to come round and go, well, the great thing about having electricity is, it'd be day one, you go, okay, get this bloody place connected to the electricity, because otherwise I'll, you know, life's not worth living. But for a period of about 10 or 20 years, you actually had salesmen who would go round and go, it's a really great idea, having electricity in your home, right? You know, and there's some lovely things about this, but which always fascinate me, because being involved a lot in what is effectively innovation, we can learn a lot about innovation in the present from what happened with innovation in the past.
The first online banner ad appeared on October 27th, 1994. The ad was bought by telecoms company AT&T and ran on Hotwired, an offshoot of Wired magazine. It contained a small graphic featuring the slogan, "Have you ever clicked your mouse right here? You will." The company paid $30,000 to place the ad on the site for a period of 3 months, and a whopping 44% of people who saw the ad used their mouse to click through to the AT&T website. Just to put that number into perspective, the average click-through rate of an ad in 2019 was just 0.35%. The initial success of these internet ads brought more brands to the party. And as the internet evolved, the advertising opportunities grew as well. However, it could be argued that this has alienated the consumer. The late consumer research specialist, Judy Lannan, explains why this is the case.
It's intrusive, it stalks them across the internet, it's too much stuff, too intrusive, and pop-ups drive them crazy. They are very much more harshly critical of digital advertising than they are of mainstream television advertising. This is what consumers get irritated with, is that everywhere, every single thing you pick up has got an ad on it somewhere. And it's very ironic, because when digital advertising first started, the proponents of it said people will love it because it's not going to be intrusive like ads on television, where they come whether you like it or not. Well, surprise, surprise, digital ads come whether you like it or not too.
Another advertising problem to have risen from the internet is the sheer number of platforms and media that are now on offer for consumers. Martin Bowes explains how this means that the chances of someone seeing an ad are much lower than they were before.
I suppose, to me, the biggest change is in the days when there were only two commercial television channels, good ads were discussed in the pub or at home every evening because it was a common experience to look at the same advertisement. Now there's absolutely no chance of that happening with the fragmentation of the media. And I think in the way that probably there are much smaller budgets available to make original and persuasive and engaging commercials. I think one could even put an argument that the fact that the thing has become so dispersed, so dissipated, in its own way makes advertising less effective, really. I think that the common discussion of original and engaging advertisements actually made them more potent in the task they're meant to perform.
Adland legend Dave Trott agrees that the fragmentation of media has led to less effective advertising. He believes part of the problem lies in the fact that creative departments are often given too many briefs for them to be able to deliver something truly impactful.
The fact that there is so much now, it's like pollution. There, you haven't got time to do a decent job. It's just crank it out and crank it out and crank it out and crank it out. And it really hasn't had any effect in, let's think about some great digital advertising. It's just like turning a tap on and you haven't got time to think about it. Just get it out because tomorrow there'll be 10 more briefs and 10 more briefs after that and 10 more briefs after that. And nobody will ever see it anyway. So just get it out.
Dave thinks that one of the main problems of online media today is that there is too much focus on targeting and not enough on content.
It's not about what you do. It's about getting someone, getting that single person at that particular place at the right time. And that's okay, but that's like a door drop. You got me and I picked your door drop up and I put it in the bin. It's still a crappy door drop. So at the moment, all digital's done is purely mechanical. It's done nothing but purely mechanical. So the media companies who think purely mechanically are able to get you and, well, swipe and lose it or click past it or click skip ad or whatever I do just to get rid of it. Because you got me, so what?
Rory believes that this prioritising of media over creativity results in too much focus being placed on efficiency. Something which goes against the very core of what successful advertising and marketing stands for.
There are large areas of life, like logistics, where efficiency and effectiveness are the same thing. Okay? If you pursue efficiency, you are making yourself more effective. I would argue there are also areas of life, dating, sex, for example, advertising, marketing, and military strategy, where efficiency and effectiveness are not the same thing. If you think about it, in military strategy, okay, you can't be efficient and logical as a military strategist because then the enemy knows exactly what you're going to do. You can't be totally logical in marketing because you end up in the same place as everybody else, which is an overcrowded field and results in a race to the bottom. In marketing and military strategy, you've got to do something which is cunningly inefficient. Now, what I'm saying here, okay, if you'd given the job of the D-Day landings to the procurement function of the army, okay, they would have insisted you cross the channel between Dover and Calais to minimise fuel costs. Okay, now that's not a good idea because that's where the Krauts were waiting, right? You had to do something conspicuously and cunningly inefficient and land in Normandy instead. And the same way in marketing, in order to acquire some sort of monopoly gains, you have to make yourself distinctive in some way. And that requires that you depart from absolutely conventional logic. Because if you're completely conventionally logical, the odds are there'll be five other people doing the same shit. You've got to be distinctively weird or inefficient in some meaningful way.
We asked Rory to unpack this idea of cunning inefficiency further, to help our understanding of what creatives need to do to make up for this rigid efficiency of digital media.
Let me explain this, I suppose, in creative terms. Let's say you want to invite people to your wedding. And one way of doing it, which is perfectly valid, is you get those really expensive wedding invitations printed. And that's a really good wedding invitation that says this is going to be a significant wedding. Now, let's say you hadn't got any money and you wanted to invite people to your wedding, but you were skint. The way you could do it is you could use creativity as an alternative to pure expense. If you wrote a song that was really, really clever and quite good, posted it on YouTube and emailed people a link, provided the song involved enough talent, in other words, scarce commodities would include money, i.e. gilt-edged invitations, but it would also include talent, rhyming ability, musical ability, writing ability. If you wrote a really good song, put it up on YouTube or emailed it to people as a link, that would probably do. And so effort and money and talent and humour and bravery are all necessary to, in some combination or other. In other words, you can't have none of any of them. Are necessary to producing a convincing communication. Because it's the amount of scarce commodities invested in the message that actually give it its conviction. Everything else is just cheap talk. And the tragic thing in digital is that people tend to go, okay, we've got this really efficient way of transmitting a message, and now we're going to do really cheap creative. Now, if you are literally using a really cheap medium, you need to use a really expensive creative treatment to counterbalance it. You know, use a famous celebrity, use fantastic copywriting skills. But the idea that once you do everything on the cheap, that's like emailing your wedding invitation, and it's not even clever or funny.
Brian Palmer was responsible for writing the first TV commercial that ran in the UK. He believes that regardless of the medium, the basic principles of advertising will always remain the same.
I think the same rules apply as in the 18th century. And I'll say two things. One was Dr. Johnson said, promise, large promise, is the soul of an advertisement. And one of my early mentors said, which I've always followed and I think is still true, so tell me quick and tell me true, or else, my love, to hell with you, less what this product claims to be, more what the damn thing does for me.
So, there you have it. Like so many industries, Adland has been completely revolutionised by the rise of the internet, with much work still to be done on how to effectively target consumers without irritating them. However, regardless of what the future of the internet may hold, the basic tenets of advertising will continue to remain the same, and will just need to be repurposed for the modern era. This Industry Insight episode of the History of Advertising podcast was presented by Jack Meggett Phillips and featured contributions from Rory Sutherland, Judy Lannan, Martin Bose, Dave Trott, and Brian Palmer. The programme was produced by Jane Jarvis and Jack Meggett Phillips. If you want to learn more about the ads featured on this programme, please visit the History of Advertising Trust. You can book a visit by emailing inquiries at hatads.org.uk.